And so today at last we've reached the end of our study of John chapter 17 and of the prayer that Jesus prayed for us, his church. And our theme for today, which is another very strong theme that is there throughout his prayer, is that his church might reflect his glory. So let's read again these very familiar words now. We won't read the whole chapter. We're reading from John chapter 17, beginning at verse 20 and reading to the end. If you want to follow in the church Bibles, it's on page number 1085. And I apologize for my hay fever. So this is John chapter 17, beginning at verse 20. Jesus prays, "My prayer is not for them alone, for the disciples alone. I pray also for those who will believe in me through their message, that all of them may be one, Father, just as you are in me and I am in you. May they also be in us, so that the world may believe that you have sent me. I have given them the glory that you gave me, that they may be one as we are one, I and them and you and me. May they be brought to complete unity to let the world know that you sent me and have loved them even as you have loved me. Father, I want those you have given me to be with me where I am and to see my glory, the glory you have given me because you loved me before the creation of the world. Righteous Father, though the world does not know you, I know you, and they know that you have sent me. I have made you known to them and will continue to make you known in order that the love you have for me may be in them, and that I myself may be in them. Amen." And now may God bless to our hearts and to our understanding this reading of his holy word, and to his name be all the glory and praise. We need to begin by asking, what do we mean by glory? What do we mean by glory? When the world uses, when I say the world, I mean people out there. When people out there uses the word glory, it tends to mean someone who's seeking after glory, someone who's seeking after fame, someone who's seeking after self-aggrandizement. But when the Bible says glory, it actually means something much more than that. Glory in John chapter 17, the word glory, is a translation of the Greek word doxa, from which we get the word doxology, a glorification. And doxa means majesty. It means perfection. In the Old Testament, glory is translated from the Hebrew word kabod. Well, actually, we don't know how it's pronounced, but that's how I'm going to pronounce it. And kabod means weighed down by splendor, weighed down by splendor, or something too great to be contained by words. That's the thrust of the meaning of the word kabod. Something altogether greater than we could imagine. We discussed the word glory at one of our team meetings a few weeks ago, and we came up with lots of ideas of what it might mean or how to capture its significance. But I think the most telling was we all agreed that that the best way to describe or to get across the meaning of glory was simply by the word wow. It was the wow experience, the wow feeling, something that takes your breath away. So it might be a song or a piece of music, or it might be a great line from a poem, or it might be watching someone dance or hearing someone sing, or it might be looking at a painting. And we sort of feel transported. And the only way we can describe it is the wow feeling. Whatever it is, it elicits a sense of wow and a response of wonder and of praise. I don't know how many of you watched the Champions League semi-final between Real Madrid and Juventus about 5 weeks ago now. A show of hands? No? Don't know if any of you saw the highlights. I didn't see it. It was the semi-final. It wasn't the final. It was the semi-final, and Juventus got knocked out by Real Madrid. And Real Madrid were playing Juventus in Turin. So the Real Madrid players were surrounded by hostile Italian, passionate Italian football fans. And one of the players for Real Madrid was Ronaldo, the famous Ronaldo, that everybody either loves or hates. And in the middle of the second half, Ronaldo scored an amazing goal. It was one of these overhead kicks where the ball's way up there and he launches himself into the air and manages to connect with this ball about 6, 7, 8 feet above the ground and kicks it over his head into the goal. It was absolutely amazing. And he scores this goal, and in this huge stadium, crammed full of passionate Italian supporters, stunned silence. And then everybody bursts into applause. It was like they realized they had just witnessed something that was at a much higher level than petty little football loyalties. They'd actually just witnessed something extraordinary and glorious. A memory that would stay with them for the rest of their lives. And then something remarkable happened. When Ronaldo heard their applause, he applauded them back again. And it was one of those really, really special moments. It rose above football, if you like. So glory is not self-aggrandizement. It's bigger. It points to something greater. If you enjoy listening to music, if you enjoy classical music, here's an example, and it's the example of an orchestra. Like, where is the glory in listening to a symphony? You've got all these individual players, and their playing glorifies the conductor. But at the same time, the conductor's conducting glorifies all the individual players. And the combination of the conductor and the individual musicians glorifies the composer. And in the back of the composer's mind is a desire to glorify the people who are going to hear the symphony, who are going to participate in this, who are going to appreciate it. And really what I'm trying to get across is that glory is not just an individual thing, it's something bigger than that. It's something that spills out. So it's something that's shared and points to something great. It cannot be contained. So what about God's glory? Psalm 19. The heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of his hands. Day after day they pour forth speech. Night after night they display knowledge. I think we've probably all experienced or had moments when nature has simply taken our breath away. I mean, it might be the stars at night. It might be a beautiful view. It might be listening to a bird sing. It might be the smell of rain on dry ground. You know that special smell that you get? And it somehow transports us out of ourselves and into a bigger world. And I think even the hardest of atheists struggle to explain that feeling. Because it's an experience that points us towards a creator. It points us towards that amazing creative wisdom and creative power that is behind nature in all of its size and beauty and complexity. We experience the glory of God. As Christians, we believe that nature points us to God. But we also believe that while God is glimpsed in nature, he is fully revealed in Jesus Christ, his Son. Here's a conversation that took place and was recorded between Philip and Jesus in John chapter 14. Philip said, "Lord, show us the Father, and that will be enough for us." Jesus answered, "Do you not know me, Philip, even after I've been among you for such a long time? Anyone who has seen me has seen the Father." It's words that are echoed in today's reading, in the prayer that Jesus prayed himself. And remember those famous lines in the very first chapter of John, chapter 1, verse 14. "The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only who came from the Father, full of grace and truth." And so while we might catch glimpses of God's glory in nature, in creation, we really see his glory revealed in Jesus. We see it clearest, if you like, revealed in Jesus. We still don't see all of it, but we see it clearest revealed in Jesus. And yet, in Jesus, there's something unexpected, and it's still to do with God's glory. Listen again to the words that Jesus says right at the very beginning of that prayer in John chapter 17. John chapter 17, verse 1. "Father," Jesus prays, "the time has come. Glorify your Son, that your Son may glorify you." The time has come. Now, what's he talking about there? He's talking about his death. This is the night before he dies. "Father, the time has come. Glorify your Son." So this is taking our understanding of glory to an altogether deeper level from just the wonder of the beauty and power of nature. This is something that's altogether deeper. And for me, as a Christian, this is the real wow moment. This is the real takes your breath away moment. Not just in my understanding of Jesus, but in my understanding of the principles that underpin and uphold the whole of God's way of doing things, the whole of his kingdom. Because at the heart of God's purposes is the love made known by Jesus on the cross. A love that is selfless and self-sacrificing. That is God's glory. That is God's glory. The God who made the heavens and earth is the God dying for us on the cross. It's just something so different, so unexpected, so unworldly, and yet it's the eternal truth at the very heart of creation. This is who God is. The God who loves us so much that he's willing to die for us. So nature reveals God's wisdom and power, but Jesus reveals God's mercy and love, and all of these things together reflect God's glory. And we have been created in God's image. And so we are called to reflect his glory in our lives. Listen again to Jesus' words in the prayer, words that we've just read. Verse 22, "I have given them the glory that you gave me, that they may be one as we are one, I and them, you and me. May they be brought to complete unity to let the world know that you sent me and have loved them even as you have loved me." We are to reflect God's glory. Of course, here we have a big problem, don't we? I mean, how could we possibly do that? How can we possibly reflect God's greatness and his wisdom and his power? How could we possibly reflect the mercy and the love that Jesus has demonstrated? How could we possibly do that? Our predicament is summed up in some famous lines in Paul's letter to the Romans, chapter 1, when he says, and you probably remember this verse, "For all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. How can we, wretched sinners, possibly live lives that glorify God? Well, here's three things that I found helpful. The first, just as you don't have to be a good writer to tell someone about a good book, or you don't have to be a good singer to tell someone about a good concert, or you don't have to be a good artist to tell someone about a great exhibition. In the same way, you don't have to be perfect to point people towards perfection. And in so doing, you're glorifying. You don't have to be wise to be able to point towards wisdom. You don't have to be all-powerful and all-loving yourself before you can point people towards an all-powerful and all-loving God. And we are, as we've been reminding ourselves all year, simply jars of clay. We are chipped, and we are cracked, and we are broken. It is Jesus who is the treasure within us. And here's the thing, as we strive to be more and more like Jesus, then more and more of his light shines through. So that's the first thing. The second thing I found to be helpful, something that we know so well, but we forget so easily, we cannot glorify God in our own strength. We just cannot do it. It just can't be done. But we can if we allow God's Holy Spirit to be at work within us. Again, another famous verse. Christ in me, the hope of glory. We can glorify God when we have Christ within us. And the third thing, we cannot do this, we cannot glorify God on our own, but we can do it as part of his church, which is his body on earth. Or maybe another way to put that would be, it is really hard to glorify God on our own. It is much, much easier if we do it as part of his body on earth, which is his church. If you go back to that image of an orchestra, in his book on John chapter 17, Michael Cassidy talks about how when we are listening to, say, a symphony, we don't just listen to one single melody being played. Rather, we listen to a combination of melodies and harmonies and phrases, rhythms and moods and themes, and together they combine to create something glorious. I may not be able to reflect much of God's glory on my own, but I can if I'm part of something bigger. I can if I'm part of a community of followers of Jesus, a community which... And here we have to do a wee bit of thinking back to all the different themes we've preached on over the last 2.5 months. I can if I'm part of a community which is striving to know God's truth. Remember in Ruth's last sermon, she preached back in April, I think, she talked about Jesus' prayer that the church might know his truth. But more than that, a church that is striving to be holy in our values and in our practices, to be godlike, so that his glory can shine through. And a church that is striving to be joyful. Remember Brad Lane came and he talked about joy, a gift from God. And he calls Jesus is praying that we might be joyful, not dutiful, not too serious, not too pious, but joyful. A church that is relying on God's protection from all that is evil in the world. Not taking our life as we have it for granted, but recognizing that we need God's protection in life. A church that's committed to his mission. Doesn't just leave it to others. But we're all committed to speaking and living the good news of Jesus and sharing the freedom that he offers. A church that is committed to joining together regularly in prayer. This is what I always bang on about, as you probably noticed. Prayer is our way of demonstrating to God how much we care and trust each other, how much we care about the things that we're praying about. If we don't do it, then clearly we're not all that bothered. A church that's committed to joining together regularly in prayer. A church that recognizes that there are differences but is united. We see each other as brothers and sisters. And all the things that irritate us about each other, as in any family, pale into insignificance compared to the love that we have for each other. A church that is united. And that brings us on to the next one. Our theme from a couple of weeks back, a church that's striving in all things to love as Christ has loved us, in a self-giving, sacrificial love. And then finally, as we saw last week when Chris was preaching, a church that is utterly reliant on God's power. Jesus says, "I am the vine, you are the branches. Abide in me, for without me you can do nothing." Nothing. And Jesus also said famously in Matthew chapter 5, "For you are the light of the world. A city built on a hill cannot be hidden." So he's not just talking about us as individuals here. He's talking about the collective you. You are the light of the world. A city built. He's not just talking about one building on a hill. You might miss the light from one building, but you won't miss the light from a city. I don't know how many of you have flown in a plane at nighttime. Are you all daytime flyers? Yeah, you're all, you know, and if you manage to get the window seat and there's a cloudless sky and you look down on the dark land beneath, you struggle to find the individual houses, but there's no missing a city because the light is just so much greater. We may not be able to glorify God much on our own, but we can if we are part of his church. So let's just pause for a moment at the end of this series, and let's take time to think back on all the things that we've learned in the last 2.5 months. All the things we've learned about the prayer Jesus has prayed for his church. And let's ask ourselves, are we as a church striving to know God's truth? Are we as a church striving to be holy? Are we joyful? Are we relying on God's protection from evil? Are we all committed to his mission? Are we all committed to joining together regularly in prayer? Are we united in our faith? Are we striving in all things to love as Jesus has loved us? Are we reliant on God's power? Listen once again to these words of Jesus. "You are the light of the world. A city on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, Let your light shine before all people, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven.